Well, good morning, everybody. I love that video. I'm not gonna lie to you. Anybody else notice how when you do something absolutely ridiculous, everybody sees it? Anybody else notice that? But like when you're, and maybe this is just me, okay? But like when you're in your office or you're doing something and you crumple up that piece of paper and just for fun, you kind of do one of these and look and it goes right in the wastebasket. You know what I'm talking about? And then you look around and nobody saw that. Like nobody saw that. Anyways. Just me. Hey, my name is Tim. My name is Tim Morris. I'm usually over at the Vestal campus, and I'm excited to be with you guys this morning. You know, over in Vestal, I'm coming with greetings from Vestal. We're excited for you guys about the new baby coming. Not here yet, but we're excited with you. We've been praying for you as a campus, for Matt and Olivia. And over in Vestal, I got to tell you, we're excited about what God's doing in Austin. We constantly get to connect with Matt. We hear about what God's doing here. There's some awesome stuff happening in Vestal. And we're excited for what's happening here at the exact same time. That's one of the cool things about the different campuses. You get around and you get to see what God's doing. And I've got a privilege to be able to do that and spend some time with you this morning. So I'm excited. We're going to dive into something here. We're going to dig a little bit deeper into this idea of pride, right? How do we kill it? How do we kill this thing that causes us to do all the things that we know we shouldn't do? How do we kill that? How do we kill the thing that keeps us from doing so many of the things that we know we ought to do? Oh, man. So many things we ought to do that we do because of pride. And so many things that we never should do, but we do because of pride. So we're going to talk about how to kill that. We're going to dig into a story in the Old Testament. And I want to give you guys a little bit of a heads up here as we dig into this story. The guy we're going to talk about is somebody who struggles with pride. Okay. Now, he's what I would call a 3P person. Okay, now let me walk you through a 3P person in case you haven't heard of this before. A 3P person would be somebody who has all three of these. They've got power, prestige, and possessions. Now, each one of these all by itself, each one of these by itself sets us up for a trap with pride, right? If we have an immense amount of power, we can just get sucked into pride. If we have prestige, meaning like people come to us for advice, people seek me out for counsel, that can just give me that sets me up, right, for an opportunity for pride just to take place in my heart, take root in my heart. Or possessions, when we have an accumulation that's vast, right, or whatever, resources, money, or car, or whatever. I mean, when possessions start to accumulate in volume or in luxury, they both, either way, right, it just starts to give room for pride to swell up in my heart. Now, this guy we're going to look at this morning, he's got all three of these. And he's got all three, not just like in a little bit, like a little bit of salt. No, he's got it in quite an extreme amount. It's quite a, we'll call it very luxurious amount, right? Like he's just got a ton of it. Now, the reason I mention this before we open up the Bible and dig into the story a little bit and look at the context is because it's so easy for us to hear a story like this, you and I. And what we can tend to do is just kind of throw a stone at the guy. And we hear this story and we think, man, that's right, you got problems. But here's the truth. We may not have it to the extreme amount of the guy we're going to look at this morning, but you and I, we have some measure of each of these. Now, so what I want to do real quick is just help us understand this. When we read through this story, anytime you're reading through the Bible and you read through a story in the Old Testament, you should be looking for two things. As you read the Bible for yourself, which we'd always encourage you to do. Okay, the first one is you want to look and see, what does it tell me about God? And then secondly, how do I relate to the characters in the story? And that can bring such insight for us as we read the story. But in this story, we're going to look at this, and we see the immense amounts of these three things that he has as a 3P kind of person. And we think, man, that guy has serious problems. And we can so easily look at him without kind of seeing ourselves in the story, right? Now, the truth is that each of us in the room has some measure of power, some measure of decision-making ability that causes influence. That may be influence on your wife or your husband. That may be influence on your kids. Your decision-making ability at work may be quite significant, right? We each have some measure of power. We each have some measure of prestige. Somebody comes and seeks out your advice at work, maybe at home, in the neighborhood. Maybe at family gatherings like this past Thanksgiving this week, maybe somebody comes and says, hey, can I run this by you? What do you think about? This is the decision I'm in the middle of. Hey, could you give me some advice on, right? We have some measure of this. And we have some measure of possessions, don't we? We have some measure. Now, some in the room may have a higher measure than others, but the truth is we all have some measure of these things. And so it's easy for us to look at a guy who has extraordinary measures of these things and say, man, you've got problems. But so easily we do that and we miss the fact that we, in whatever measure we've been granted, oh man, I've got problems too. And I'm just going to be upfront with you. Going through this passage this week, digging into it so I could be prepared to come and teach this morning, this was hard for me. And it wasn't hard for me because the story is quite difficult. It's not that. You'll see the story kind of preaches itself, if you know what I mean. But okay, but it was hard because it was humbling. And I had to go to my wife and go, oh, man, I'm so convicted going through this passage. I am such a prideful man. And my wife looked at me and goes, yeah, you are. Because I am. I'm such a prideful man. And it's so easy for me to forget. And pride causes us to forget so quickly. And so what we want to do is we want to look at this. Now, next week, we're going to look at a story. When the guy comes up here, whoever that is that fills in for Matt, if he's not with us next week, when they teach, they're going to teach about somebody who does this whole thing well, handles pride well, kills it, and is a man of humility. But today, we're going to look at somebody, like I said, who is a three-peat person who botches this entire thing and see what happens. Can we do that together? We're going to look at King Nebuchadnezzar. Now, maybe that's not a word or a name you've heard in a long time. King Nebuchadnezzar, let me give you some background, then we'll jump into Daniel. King Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon. Now, Babylon was a massive ancient civilization, a massive kingdom. And Babylon, what they would do is as they grew in might and power, they would go into another land, a foreign nation, and they would just take down the nation. They would sack it. They would take its capital. They would take all the cities, and they would just defeat them. They would annihilate them. And then what they would do is they would take the best of everything that nation has to offer and take it back to the capital of Babylon. So what they would do is they'd go in. They'd take the best cattle. They'd take the best, the gold, the silver, the riches, all of that. They'd take the best of the harvest. They'd take the best and brightest young men and the most beautiful young women, and they'd take them all back to Babylon, to their capital of this massive, expanding empire, right? When they did this, they would bring the best and the brightest young men, for instance, not because they wanted to enslave them, though they kind of would, but what they would do is they'd bring them back and they'd educate them in the way of the Babylonians. And then as they were educated and brought up as young men, then they would bring them and they'd bring them around the whole palace area and they would get added into the fold of the advisors and the counselors to the king. So King Nebuchadnezzar was not advised by the best and brightest of his own people. He was advised and counseled by the best and the brightest of the entire kingdom, right? Kind of a wise thing, I guess, but that's kind of who this guy was. Now, in about 586, as best I can tell, B.C., the kingdom of Babylon comes and they take over the southern kingdom of Israel, Jerusalem. They sack Jerusalem and they carry away everything of value. They almost completely destroy the city. At this time, the kingdom of Israel has been divided in two. The northern kingdom has already been taken by Assyria. Babylon comes along a couple hundred years later and they take the southern kingdom. And that's what happens. So likewise, just like he does with all these other kingdoms, he takes the best and brightest, the most beautiful, all the things of value and carts them back to Babylon, to the capital, to the king. And so here's what happens. He does that, and like the other countries, with Israel, when he does that, he takes away all the brightest and best young men. And there are four young men that we come to know and hear about in church often as we read through the Old Testament. And those four guys, number one is Daniel. We're going to dig into his story here in just a few minutes and his interaction with Nebuchadnezzar. But then there's three other guys. And we always seem to talk about them in a group. Maybe you know them. They're Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? So these four young men, they come, they get trained up by Nebuchadnezzar and his whole court of advisors, and then they become part of his advisors, part of his counselors, okay, in the kingdom. A few years later, he has a dream, Nebuchadnezzar does, and he has this dream, and he says, I want to get my wise men together, and I want to kind of bring them together. I want to, guys, tell me what my dream meant. But he's wise to these wise guys, right? And so he says, if I tell you the dream, then you're going to be able to just make something up and tell me what it means. So I'm not going to make it that easy for you. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to tell me my dream, then tell me what it means. Well, now there's a challenge, right? And all the counselors, all the wise men, they all go, whoa, 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 nobody can do that. Nobody can do that. We can't tell you what you dreamed. Except for Daniel. Daniel comes in, raises his hand, and he just basically says, hey, I can do it, but give me one day. Give me 24 hours, king, and I will come back. I'll tell you your dream, and I'll tell you what it means. So 24 hours goes by, he comes back, and Daniel tells him the dream, and he's dead on. This is the dream. This is what happened in your dream. Here's what it means. And the king immediately, he goes, you got to be kidding me. This kid, this Jewish kid right here, whoever his God is, new rule, we're worshiping the God of this Jewish kid because he's so impressed. But as happens, he forgets about that event. And a few years later, there's another story where in Daniel, where he gets so prideful and he looks at this massive expanding kingdom like we talked about. And he says, look at what I've built. Look at my power and my might. Oh, man, this is incredible. What we're going to do is build up an idol, build up a statue that represents my power. And then everybody's going to worship my power. And so he does that. He builds it up. And he calls everybody together and he says, worship this statue, this image of my power. Daniel, for some reason, we don't know exactly where he is, but he's not present at this moment. But the other three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are, right? And so they come before him, and they say, we can't do that. We can't worship your power. We can't do that. I'm sorry, king. And he says, no, you have to, or you go into a fire. And they say, well, then I guess it's the fire because we can't do it. And so he does. He has this furnace off to the side, and he stokes it up, gets it real hot, and he throws these three young men in it to burn them alive. And instead of burning them alive, they're walking around in there. And he's like, what's going on? Get them out of here. Get them out here. They come out. Not only are they not burned, they don't even smell like smoke. And they come out, and he says, what happened? New rule. New rule, everybody. We're going to worship the God of these three Jewish kids. You'd think he would have remembered, right? Like, this is a pattern, right? Now, here's the truth, okay? Pride has a really bad memory, okay? And before we throw too many stones at Nebuchadnezzar, we got to relate to this a little bit, okay? Pride has a horrible memory. We look at Nebuchadnezzar, and as we get into the next part of this story, we think to ourselves, this guy has an on-again, off-again relationship with God. Man, he's on when everything goes haywire, and then when everything goes in his way, he doesn't care at all. Right? He's got such a short-term memory, and pride does that to us, doesn't it? I mean, okay, so in my life, I'm here on a Sunday, and my Bible is off the shelf, in my hands open, and I'm reading it, and I'm pleading with God when my life is falling apart, when things don't make sense, when things are difficult, right? But then things get to go back to normal, and they get easy, and pretty soon the Bible goes back on the shelf. My Sunday mornings get filled with other things. I don't cry out to God anymore because what to cry out for? It's going great. We've got this on and again, off again relationship with God too. I mean, let's not kid ourselves, right? And so he does this and he goes back and forth. What a horrible memory pride gives us. We forget the times when God was faithful so quickly. We forget the times when he got us through something difficult, or when he showed up when we were a disaster. We forget so quickly. Which brings us to chapter 4 in Daniel. If you have a Bible, go ahead and turn there. If you're not using a Bible, or you got one on your phone, fantastic, follow along. If not, don't worry too much. Just kind of look up here. I'm going to read it right off the screen here, or you can look at the big one above me, and we're going to kind of walk through this a little bit. Chapter 4 in Daniel. Here's what happens. Nebuchadnezzar has another dream. And here's what he says about the dream. Let's look at chapter 4, verse 4. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at home in my palace, contented and prosperous. Real quick, this is a 3P kind of guy, right? Like, if you're going to have the 3P kind of guy, this is it, okay? If you have a palace, how many of you live in a palace, right? If you live in a palace, you've got some power, okay? If you are prosperous, the amount of wealth that he has accumulated, right? He's got things. The possessions are not a problem for this guy. Okay, he's got power and possessions, and he's contented. What that means is he's sitting in his palace, and he's quite fine. He doesn't go to somebody else to seek their advice and their counsel. He doesn't need their prestige. No. Everybody comes to him, right? This is a guy full of power, prestige, and possessions. And here's what happens. He says, I was at home in my palace, verse 5. He says this, I had a dream that made me afraid. I had a dream that made me afraid. Now, here's the dream in a nutshell. You can read it for yourself in the next few verses, but here it is in a nutshell. He's in his dream, and there's a beautiful tree. It's a massive tree. I mean, big enough in the dream that the whole world sees this tree. It's huge, and it's gorgeous. And a voice from heaven cries out, "Cut it down! Cut it down!" And they cut it down. And all that's left is a stump in the ground. Picture that. Big, beautiful tree laying on its side, and there's a stump with its roots still in the ground. That's the image, right? So he's got this dream, and here's what he says. Let's move forward a little bit. I think it's verse 17. He says this: "The decision is announced by the messengers." Many people believe this to be kind of like angels, but in his dream, there's messengers, the holy ones. They declare the verdict so that the living may know that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes. Listen to me real quick. This phrase is so powerful. When you see these two words, real quick, so that when you're reading your Bible on your own, you see those two words, underline them, circle them, highlight them, whatever you got to do to make them stand out for you. Because whatever happens afterwards is the reason why whatever just took place, why it happened, right? And here it is. Say this with me. If we go to the next slide in yellow, read this with me, okay? A little bit of interaction with you this morning. What's the reason? So that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes. The so that is that the living may know that. They've got to know that. They've got to know that. So this is why this tree gets cut down. This is why everything happens that we're going to read about in this story here in the next few minutes, all right? So here's what happens. This tree gets cut down. He calls Daniel in. He says, "Daniel, I had a dream. It made me afraid." And he tells the dream to Daniel. Here's what Daniel says. In verse 19, "My Lord, if only your dream applied to your enemies and its meaning to your adversaries." Daniel's standing there and he hears the dream. He starts going white. I mean, the color just fades from his face. And the king says, "Why you look scared? Don't look terrified. Like, it can't be that bad. I'm Nebuchadnezzar. Come on, this is going in my favor, right? Come on." And he says, No. "If only it applied to your enemies and your adversaries. But it doesn't," and he's scared. And so he starts to recount the dream. And in a few verses later, he makes this statement: "Your Majesty, you're the tree. You're the tree." Nebuchadnezzar's got to be like, "What do you mean?" Like, metaphorically, right? Like, you think I'm... And he's like, "You're the tree in this story." He goes on to give us the interpretation. Here's what he says: "Your Majesty saw a holy one, a messenger, coming down from heaven and saying, 'Cut down the tree, destroy it, but leave the stump.'" Leave the stump. He goes on. "Let him be drenched with dew of heaven, with the dew of heaven. Let him live with the wild animals until seven times pass by him." Let's keep going. "This is the interpretation, Your Majesty, and this is the decree the Most High has issued against my lord, the king. You will be driven away from people and will live with the wild animals. You will eat grass like an ox and be drenched with the dew of heaven." And he's like, metaphorically, right? "No. No, king, this is for real." Let's go to the next verse. "Seven times will pass by you, for until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all the kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes." You guys catch that? Seven times will pass by you. Many people believe this is just 7 years. It's a period of time. 7 years will pass by until you acknowledge. Go to one more slide. Read it with me again in yellow, okay? "Until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to" who? "Anyone he wishes." To sum it up, here's basically what he says to him. "You're a king, Nebuchadnezzar. You're a king, but you're not the king. You're a king, but you're not the king. You might have power. You might have some prestige. You might even have some possessions. And in vast, extraordinary amounts, king, it's true, you have a kingdom. But see, you've misplaced yourself and thought you were the king. That's a problem. That's a problem." Again, before we throw stones at the sky, can we just be honest with ourselves for a second? Don't think outside this room. Don't think about all the people that you know that may have a problem with pride outside of this room. None of this, okay? You hear that? None of this little elbow thing to your spouse or to the people next to you, okay? Just between me and you, think about this for a second. We have a kingdom. Some are more vast than others, but we all have a kingdom, meaning we all have some measure of power, of decision-making influence. We all have some measure of prestige, some influence of counsel and advice where people seek us out. We all have some measure of possessions. We all have some vast kingdom, well, at least to some degree, right? See, the problem with pride is that when we start thinking pridefully, when pride takes root in my heart and in your heart, what it does is it pushes everything else out. There's no room for anything else because pride takes hold. When pride comes in, there's no room for my wife anymore. My spouse gets pushed out of the equation. I'm the most important. Would you be quiet? This is my kingdom. I mean, it doesn't have room for my kids. I've got 3 young kids, and the oldest is 11. And when they come and they need something from me and they seek me out, I say, whoa, I don't have time for that. I've got bigger things to do. I'm working here, right? I have my kingdom. Don't harass me. My possessions, right? We all have some measure of these things. And when pride takes over, when we start looking at those things as our kingdom, we push out all kinds of relationships. And the worst among them is we push God right out of the picture. We push him right out. There's no room for him. Why? Because this is my kingdom. I'm in control here. Don't come in here and tell me what to do, how to do this, how to handle this. This is my kingdom. And we fall into this trap so easily. We think we're the king. And what we've got to hear from Nebuchadnezzar's story is, you're not a king. Excuse me, you're not the king. You might be a king. You might be someone in charge of a kingdom, however small or vast that is. But you're not the king. So Daniel, he goes on and he starts to plead with him. And he says, listen, king, this is only going to happen for a season. A couple verses later, it says this. The command to leave the stump of the tree with its roots means your kingdom will be restored to you and you acknowledge that heaven rules. This little phrase, that heaven rules. This is the only place in the Bible we find this phrase. When we acknowledge that heaven rules, the seat of authority, the seat of power, the seat of ultimate prestige, the seat of ownership of everything is in heaven, not here. When you acknowledge that you don't rule, but heaven rules, then things shift. That's the shift for pride to humility, realizing that heaven rules, not me. So easy for me to think I rule. And that's what we forget so quickly. We forget so quickly that heaven rules. And we start to believe this lie of pride that I rule. It's my power. The things that I have in my possession are because I accumulated them. And of course you seek my advice. Because who wouldn't? And we start thinking I rule, not heaven. And that's a problem. He pleads with him in the next few verses. Please, king, repent now. Repent. Turn from your wickedness. Turn from your pride. Come to a place of humility. And if you do that, maybe it will go well with you. But the king doesn't do that. The king doesn't do that. Matter of fact, in the following verses, read it for yourself, about 12 months goes by. After this dream and this interaction with Daniel, about 12 months. And in a year, he has completely forgotten what should have humbled him, what should have brought him to a place of humility, a choice to say, okay, I will be humble. I'm not the king, though I am a king. And so I will humble myself because heaven ultimately rules. He doesn't do that. Instead, 12 months later, here's what we see. Let's go back to this passage for me with us for just a second. He says this, okay? He's up on the top of his palace. He's looking out over his kingdom, and he says, is not this the great Babylon I have built? Do you hear how he owns it? As the royal residence by my mighty power for the glory of my majesty. Nebuchadnezzar's like, do you see what I've done? Do you see what's before me? He has completely forgotten about taking a position or a posture of humility like Daniel advised him. He's ignored that, and instead he has owned it himself. I am the king. And immediately after that, here's what happens. Even as the words were on his lips, a voice came from heaven. This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. Your royal authority, your power has been stripped from you. The next verse goes on. Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from the people and ate grass like an ox. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven. You are a king. Well, at least you used to be. You were a king, but not the king. And like that, his power was taken from him. His prestige was taken from him. For who would go out into the fields to consult an ox? And like that, his possessions are taken from him. He's no longer living in his palace. He's now under the dew of heaven, meaning all night long he's sleeping in the field. He no longer has any of this vast kingdom that he once had. What made up his kingdom is gone immediately. I mean, that fast. It's gone. We get so prideful, you and I, and we think what I have built truly is magnificent. And we miss that we didn't build much of anything. And what we have can be taken away like that. Like that. But pride, remember, pride leads us, when it wells up in our hearts, it leads us to believe things that are not true. And we forget truth. We forget that it can be taken away like that. And we think, this is so great what I have done. And surely, I am the king. At the end of this time, let's see what happens. Nebuchadnezzar speaks again, and he says this. At the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. Do you remember the phrase? So that the living may know that the Most High. Here's what he does. He praises the Most High. Listen to the change in the words of his whole attention. Has shifted from being prideful about I'm the king. It's shifted now to a place where in humility he says, let's recognize the rightful king. And he says this, then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. He goes on, his dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. And he keeps going. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the king of where? Heaven, the rightful king. Because everything he does is right, and all his ways are just. And then he ends with this phrase, and I love this phrase, not because it is encouraging to me as a prideful man, but I love it because it's so true. And even as a prideful man, I pray that I have the humility to find truth and hold on to it. And here's what he says. Those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. That is sobering for me. I pray it's sobering for you too. If we were to summarize this whole thing from Nebuchadnezzar, here's what I'd say to you. Here's the point for us. We can make a choice. We can be humble or we can be humbled. It's a choice. If we choose to be humble, we are the active agent in that, and we make a choice to submit ourselves and say, no, 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 I'm not the king. I'm not the king. Don't look to me. I'm not all that impressive. I mean, this is difficult, right? But it's true. If we take that posture, all of a sudden, I'm not that important. Pride is dispelled from my heart, and all of a sudden, there's room for everyone. There's room in my marriage for my wife because I'm not that impressive. I'm not the one who makes all the decisions. Heaven rules. We're in this together. There's room for my kids. And I do have a kingdom. I still have power and prestige and possessions to some measure. But it's not truly mine. There's room for God. There's a ton of room for God. Because in a posture of humility, why would I not want room for the king when I acknowledge that I'm not the king, but he is? And I want him there. The thing is that when we make that choice of a posture of humility, things go well. But when we don't make that choice, we're often humbled. And being humbled is humiliating. Because what others know to be true of us, we are forced to see for ourselves. And that's hard. And Nebuchadnezzar, he was humbled. And it was humiliating to have his power and his prestige and his possessions stripped from him. It's humiliating. I want to give you three things that can help us as we close, okay? Three things that if we want to remember this, if we want to remember, how can we do that? If we can pursue humility and not pride, and edge pride, kill pride, how can we do it? Here's three things we can learn from the story. The first one is this. It's a stewardship. It's a stewardship. Because the Most High, he gives to whatever, whoever he wants. It has been given to you. My little kingdom, your little kingdom, however vast it is, has been given to you by the Most High. It's a stewardship. You didn't earn it. It's been handed to you. It's a stewardship. The second one is this. It's temporary. It's temporary. It has been given, and just like Nebuchadnezzar, it can be taken away. And if you should be so lucky to enjoy your kingdom for as long as you live here on this earth, on the day you die, you can't take any of it with you. It's still temporary. Our power, our prestige, our possessions, in whatever measure you enjoy, it's temporary. And lastly, this is a sobering one. We're accountable. We're accountable. Because the rightful ruler, the king, will one day call me to account for what he has given to me, what he has handed me. And how I handle it, man, makes all the difference. This is why this is so important, okay? This is why. Because this afternoon, tomorrow morning, when you get up, when you get home, when you go about your life, you're going to engage other people. You're going to do things. And when you get an award, when you get your paycheck, when you get some accolades of some value, and you start to have that subtle voice in your heart, because it's so subtle, it's so subtle. And that voice of pride that starts to well up that goes, you are somebody. This is why this is important. You and I, we need to go, no, pride. No, didn't you hear the message? It's a stewardship. This is temporary. I'm accountable for this. No. Remind yourself of truth. Don't have a short-term memory with this stuff. No. It's subtle. When you see someone who has less than you, they don't know what you know. They don't have what you know. They can't buy what you can buy. They haven't been where you've been, experienced what you've experienced. And we so subtly in our heart, it wells up this thing of pride. It wells up and we start to look down on because they don't have or know or been where I've been. As soon as that happens, kill it. No. Pride, no, I'm not even going to give an ear to that. This is a stewardship. Whatever I have, whatever I have done, wherever I have been, whatever I have the ability and the resources to do, no, I'm accountable for that. This is important. This is how you kill it. This is how you manage and defeat pride in your life and don't give it root in your heart. This is important so that what you own doesn't own you. This is important so that what God and heaven have granted to you for a season to accomplish something, you actually accomplish. This is important for you and I because if we handle this well from a posture of humility, then we would be one who's a faithful steward, who I believe through the passage of Scripture, God would look at and say, man, you handle it well. Here's a little bit more power, a little bit more prestige, a little bit more possessions. Not so that you have a greater kingdom, but when we handle them well and accomplish His will, He grows what we're doing so that we can do more for Him. What a blessing to do that for the King. We want to be good stewards, and good stewards never make the fatal mistake of thinking they are the owner, mistaking the fact that instead of just being a king, I'm the king. That's a fatal mistake. Let's walk with the King, the King. Can we do that? Let me pray. God, thank you so much. We glorify you. We praise you. You are amazing. The story of Nebuchadnezzar is sobering for me. God, I want to be a humble man. And I'm so prideful. It creeps up every day. It seems like every hour. God, I pray that you would help me be humble. I pray for my friends here with me this morning. I pray that you would help all of us, as we pursue humility, as we pursue a memory that reminds us of who you are and what you've done for us. Help us to be humble, because we know that you are a glorious God. You are the King. You are the one who rules in heaven in a seat and in a throne rightfully occupied when you sit in it. And God, I pray that you would help us to remember that you are someone who can take a pride man and make him humble. Help us to take a posture of humility and kill pride and walk with you so we can honor you. We pray these things in your name. Amen.